I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome to Loveline with neo-feminist entrepreneur and talk show host Amber Rose.
I'm going to be talking about sex, relationships, and self-confidence. Everything from sexual curiosity to self-empowerment.
Amber is joined by certified sex therapist Dr. Chris Donahue.
I'll be talking about my own personal experiences and answering intimate questions from fans.
This is Loveline with Amber Rose.
Hey, you're listening to Loveline with Amber Rose and Dr. Chris. What's up, Dr. Chris?
Hey, it's been a while. How you been?
Yeah, I'm good, man. I'm good. Just chilling.
Yeah? How was your birthday?
It was good. Oh, my God. I had so much fun. It was amazing.
I saw all the photos. It looked like you were down in the water.
A little something light.
On that boat. Looking good, mother.
Yeah, it was fun. It was really fun. It feels really good to be 34.
Yeah, why?
Yeah, I don't know. I just feel like I don't feel old. I don't feel young and immature and stupid. I just feel like it's just a really good age. Like, I'm established and I got my own shit. And, like, I just feel like a grown-ass woman. I'm a MILF.
Like, it's just you are such a MILF. Yeah. You just reached another level of MILFdom. Congrats.
Yeah, thank you, honey.
You're real MILFy.
Yeah. Thanks. Thanks, babe. How was your week?
It was good. I had my birthday.
Oh. I hate you. How was your birthday?
It was great.
What'd you do?
We had like a get together.
Mm-hmm.
And it was low key. I'm a low key guy. But it was really sweet. Had a few surprises.
Yeah. Oh no, that's dope. That's awesome.
It's near Halloween, so I like to do Halloween based things. So
yeah, for
we
sure.
Actually got a group together and went and did like a haunted hayride thing.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I like almost like forgot your birthday because you like never post pictures. Oh my God. So wait, I moved over here to your couch where you sit because the sun is in our eyes and it's so low.
That's why I sit on the pillows, but these ones are furry, so the fur attacks me. So did you do anything for Halloween?
So I took Sebastian trick-or-treating. He was Chucky and I was Tiffany, bride of Chucky.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that is so badass.
Yeah. Yeah, it was cool. It was fun. He got a lot of candy. You know, it's Halloween all year round at our house.
Oh, it sure is. Yours is the only house where no matter what time of the year it is, you will find dismembered body parts strewn throughout the yard and whatnot.
And like fake blood.
Yeah, totally.
Like, you're like, is someone dying in here? I'm like, no, just fake blood from Halloween
store. That's why I love coming over.
But we actually live around the corner from a Halloween store that's open all year.
Uh-oh.
So we go shopping over there all the time.
I'm sure you do.
Yeah. It's, yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. So,
Anal. You had a story for me.
Oh, yes. Okay, so I know on your list is for me to try anal.
Sure is.
And I haven't tried anal. I'm sorry to disappoint you.
Womp, womp.
I know. I haven't. I know. I'm not ready yet. But I am pro-masturbation, as you know. It's the safest sex in the world. And I was thinking about starting my own sex toy line.
Yes.
Right? For safe sex and, you know, to experiment and get to know your body and learn your body and stuff like that. So I went out and I got a bunch of different stuff.
All right.
And I bought an anal plug.
Really?
I did.
What? Mother's graduating.
I tried it. It's a little tiny little bullet. It's a tiny little baby one.
I'm sure you were like, sir, anything smaller? They're yeah. like, no, man, this is literally as small as it gets.
I was like, So I tried it.
Right.
Right. And so I lubed it up.
Yes.
And it, you know, it kind of has to get over that little like, yeah. And so at first I'm like, I can't believe I'm doing this. I can't wait to tell Dr. Chris. And so, you know, I was away from my man
right.
and I, you know, I was just like, let me just try whatever. And I got it in there And it was nice.
Oh, see.
It was. It actually felt really fucking good. You just liberated
so many women because they were kind of hanging on every word where you're like, I don't know. Da, da. You just, yeah. Wow. Well done.
Yeah. It actually felt really good. And I was really surprised. Like once you get over the little hump.
Yeah.
And it got up in there and I was like, this is actually fucking arousing. This is like really cool.
So what does this mean?
I don't know yet, Dr. Krabs.
What Relax. Does this mean?
God.
That is really exciting.
Yeah, thanks, honey.
I love it.
Yeah, so I finally tried it and it actually felt really good. I was really surprised.
So tell me more about the sex line.
So I want to have really amazing, you know, toys that people can experiment with.
I love that.
You know, because there's a lot of times, I mean, listen, I'm in a relationship now. There was a lot of times where I was very single. I would masturbate more often. But, you know, when I'm away from my boyfriend, you know, he's about to go on tour and stuff like that. I was just like, why not? Let me just try some new things. You know, you definitely inspired me. And, yeah, and I was just like, you know what? Why not?
Well, that's the whole point. I think... to allow yourself the possibility of having diverse ways to have sex with your partner and with yourself is a benefit, because as our relationship changes and our body changes and we age, there's going to be times where we aren't maybe wanting to be penetrated, maybe vaginally or at all. And sex toys allow us to still have sex with our partner by using something with them or them using something on us, or we can masturbate with them. And it just keeps it new and it keeps it interesting. And a lot of times people's sexuality is about, I'm just going to do the few things that I'm comfortable with.
Yeah. And well, then, yeah, that was me for a long time.
Right.
But, and I know like my boyfriend is definitely not with sex toys at all. So okay. I'm just going to try them, you know, when he's not around. Right. And just, you know, experiment a little bit.
Perfect.
Yeah.
I hope that inspires other people as well.
It was really nice. I wasn't mad at it. I really wasn't mad at it. I was like, oh.
I want to see it because I'm imagining being the world's smallest.
I mean, it's pretty small. It's pretty small. It's like a little teardrop.
And says, oh, yeah, that's sweet. I, you know, again.
Well, I mean, what did you want me to do? Like look, a fucking...
A year from now, my mom would be like.
You want me to get a King Kong fucking butt plug?
I
want
you to have the King Kong dong.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah, I saw some big ones in there. I said, whoa, ho, ho, ho. That is, I'm not ready for that. But it was cute. Oh, it was definitely cute. I wasn't mad at it.
And I want to give a little shout out to the guys that are willing to also experience that.
Listen, it probably feels better for a guy.
Right.
Because you guys have the prostate. But it was nice. I might sneak it up in there while I'm doing it one day. I don't know. Might surprise him with a little
teardrop.
With a little tear. He might like be hitting it from the back and be like, bitch, what? What do you have in your ass right? What is this?
Hey, baby.
It has like a pink little heart. That's on
sure
the back.
Does. Sure does. I expect nothing less.
Oh, God, Jesus.
We got a caller.
Do we have a caller?
Oh, my God. I'm sweating in here.
All right. We have a caller. Stephanie's on the line.
Hello?
Hey, Stephanie. Have you ever used a butt plug?
Jumping right in there.
Just kidding. Hi, Stephanie. How can we help you?
I am so excited. I'm freaking out. I'm actually waiting in my car because I'm supposed to be at work like in 5 minutes.
Oh, my goodness.
I'll be late because it's you guys, and I don't care right now.
Good.
Tell them.
Priorities.
So my question, well, I'm going to give you a little bit of a backstory of, you know, about my question. So I'm bisexual. I have a girlfriend. She's full lesbian. But at the moment, we are kind of having a bit of trouble with our relationship, because every time we try to become intimate, it's a bit hard for me to be aroused with the things she does to me.
And when you say arousal, what does that mean?
I can't, it's hard for me to be turned on or get turned on, pretty much.
So it's the feeling of interest that's lacking.
I believe so, yes. It's just, I do love her. Like, I'm not going to say I don't, because I really do. It's just, for some reason, I'm having trouble with that. And lately, I've been feeling that way as well. Like, either with guys or with girls, it doesn't matter. It's just feel like I'm lacking that right now. And it's basically causing a bit of trouble with our relationship. But I'm just wondering to, I'm just curious to know, is there anything I could do? Because right now she feels like she's the one who is not attractive, because I'm not in the mood.
And that is the most unfortunate outcome of someone not having immediate arousal or of a lot of arousal, is we personalize. And
yeah,
we were talking about this on the last episode. Amber, you weren't here. I feel shamey when I just said that. I didn't mean
mad
it like
shame.
That.
I feel shamed.
But we were talking, a girl called in and she said, I lost my house in Florida in the hurricane. Mm-hmm. And since then I haven't had any sex drive and I'm really sexual and it really scares me. And I said, oh man, you know, when massive major life events occur, it's expected that your sex drive isn't going to really be priority or, you know, very active necessarily, but don't panic because, and I say this to you as well, Stephanie, our sex drives and our arousals often going to be very cyclical, and it has to be understandable that there's going to be times throughout our relationship with someone where we're more interested or less interested, and that has to be allowed. Our sexuality mm-hmm. isn't just something that operates on autopilot.
Yeah. Like, she would also mention the fact that what if I leave her for a guy because I'm not in the mood, or I'm not turned on, or anything like that. And that's what her fear is.
Biphobia?
So, yeah.
Because that's what that kind of falls under a little bit. You know, you could leave her for another woman just as quickly, or, you know, as much as you could leave her for another man. It's not really your sexual orientation that's the problem. Mm-hmm. It's that you're in a phase in your relationship where your sex drive isn't as high. And what do you personally make up about why that is? Do you have your own personal theory?
I believe it's just with everything that's been happening lately, there's just a lot of family issues in my career and in work. It's a lot for me to handle. I'm actually trying to be in the military. I'm joining the military, so pretty soon. So she's a little worried that I'm going to just leave and find someone else. But that's also one of... I'm not concerned about that because I know that's not going to happen. But it's just with family, because it's just, I have a lot of pressure
right.
from me leaving.
But listen, so you just itemized a lot of really massive life stressors and changes. And again, I want everyone that's listening to really hear this, that we have to understand that our partner's arousal is going to rise and drop throughout our relationship for various reasons. And more times than not, it's not about us. And when I'm working with a patient and they tell me, you know, I just lost my job, or I'm nervous about starting a new job, or I'm having conflict at home, of course I expect them to say, sex is just not a priority right now. I'm trying to work on getting these basic needs met. And this is actually when you need your girlfriend to be really supportive and say, is there anything you need from me to help you get through all this, and to really not make sex such a stressor? Are you able to really still show up with a lot of affection?
Yeah, of course. I make sure that I try to be as much as affectionate as much as I can.
Right.
Because I don't really see her as much, because also there's another problem too. It's just my mom has no idea I'm into girls. Well, she actually knows, but she's not. She's not into the idea. She's against it. So it's not like I could just bring her over.
Right.
And things like that. So that's one of our issues too.
So Amber, have you ever been in a relationship where you loved him? You thought he was hot, but you went through a phase where you're like, just not into sex right now.
No.
Oh, shit. Really?
Mm-mm.
Wow. I'm surprised to hear that.
No. No, because I don't know. I just...
Close your ears, Stephanie.
I wouldn't say... No, there's nothing wrong.
This is
I wouldn't say I'm hypersexual, but I guess I allow myself to have enough time to myself to miss that person. So when I do see them, I kind of always want them.
That's good.
I work a lot. I kind of always have. And you know, I like to get up. I run errands. I like to miss them a lot throughout the day. So like when I do see them, I want them.
And Amber just really illuminated a powerful psychological theory around sex, which is, in order for sexual arousal to be at its best, we need to have just the right amount of closeness and connection, but also the right amount of distance and space, because there is such a thing as couples spending so much time together that there isn't enough distance for them to have desire and interest and to want.
And also, when there's distance, you still have to stay connected.
Yep.
Because if there's too much distance, you start to like start to not get to know each other.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like you kind of separate and then you get back together and you're like, I really don't have nothing to talk to you about. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And and that's what's interesting is I've worked with some couples where I've said to them, you need way more closeness. There's so much distance. And then I've worked with couples where I've said, it really seems like it's working against you, that you are going to bed together, waking up together, together all day. You both work from home. You're texting all day. It's like they're your best friend. They're also your sex partner. And there's just no space or distance for one to desire or want the other. And I say to them, you need time away and space. And so think about that. You know, I would say here, Stephanie, number one, it's not shocking that while these life events are going on, that sex is just not important to you. So saturate your girlfriend with affection and sensuality so that she feels wanted and desired. And number two, maybe try to allow some space and distance, not to like leave or disappear, but allow gaps of time and see if any of that drives it forward. And also try maybe changing up some of the sex style.
And texting and foreplay and like all that.
She's very into that. Okay, so I'll try to make sure I do number three.
Texting, yeah.
And then also, we talked about heading to like a sex shop soon.
Yeah.
But it's just that she's not into the whole, I guess, she's not into toys. Because she mentioned, she's like, if I don't want the real thing inside of me, what do you think? Like, why would I want like something that's not real inside of me anyway? So basically,
that's so strange.
I'll tell you why you do. Because, and this comes up with some, with men as well, where they say, I don't, because you would be using it on her and with her. It would be an extension of you. It would be you still participating. It's kind of like saying, why would I want to do anything with you?
Yeah, just because you want penetration doesn't mean you want it from a man and you want actual penis. It does. It's not the same thing. I mean, I'm sure she fingers you, right?
Yeah, she does.
It's like a finger's good because it comes from her finger, but not a toy.
And also, or a strap on. I was just actually, this is kind of funny. We're talking about this. So Amber was a minute ago, Stephanie, before he called in, talking about a sex line that she's going to launch. And this afternoon, coincidentally, I was at a sex shop. It's a long story as to why. And I always recommend to people wander around and see like what you don't know and see what grabs your attention. And every time I go, which isn't that frequently, I'm always shocked at things that I wasn't aware that they now had or in that way or in that color or in that shape or in that size. And, or I'm reminded of things I'd forgotten about. And so go together. There's something really arousing about being in a sex shop and just get lost. Yeah.
I think that's what we're going to do pretty soon. Well, and because my birthday's coming up, so I think, you know, we should go and get a few toys for my birthday.
Love it.
Just have fun.
Have fun. Yep. Good luck.
Thank you.
And then also, I want to tell you, I saw, I guess you, Mr. Chris, I saw you at my job. I don't know if you remember.
Oh, my God.
Freaking out.
I do. Yes. I do remember. On Larchmont.
Yes. I was fangirling over you after you left. Oh. I was just freaking out.
Thanks.
Oh, that was awesome.
So, thanks for calling in. That was sweet.
Oh, you're awesome.
I'll see you there soon.
Thank you, you know, for all the advice.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Oh, that's funny.
Yes, fans.
I was getting lunch the other day at my at a restaurant near my office, and Stephanie was in there, and she did like a double take, and I had said to her, I only want half guacamole, and I thought she was calling me out on the guacamole, and I was like, but I only want half. She was like, no, I know who you are.
Oh my God. She's a fan the whole time.
Oh, that's so funny.
You're
wait, that's really interesting. You, that, you know, in the course of all your relationships, sexuality has always been something that was, I guess, in action for you and never had any lulls.
Yeah.
I
don't know. But you know, I love really hard too.
You do.
You know, I do. I give 150%. So like, for me, it's like, if I'm with you, I'm definitely into you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm like that a lot. I think you love. Yeah, me and you have a lot of similarities. I have been with people that I was super in love with and super attracted to and went through phases where I was less interested in sex. I actually, recently there was an interview done. It kind of went a little viral. They interviewed Pink, the performer, the singer. Mm-hmm. And she's been married to her husband for 11 years. And it was a really beautiful article because for her, she was talking very candidly, which few people do, about the difficulty of monogamy. And she
he had cheated before, right?
Oh, did he?
Well, yeah, I think they had separated.
Okay.
And then maybe even divorced and then got back together.
Okay, she didn't get into that, but that's actually powerful to know. Mm-hmm. But she was saying that, like, you know, as much as she's in love, as long as it's been, that there are periods where, you know, she said a long-term relationship, sometimes you can expect to go a year without sex. And I mean, that's a long time.
Wow. That's what she said.
And for a lot of couples I work with, once they've gotten to that length of time, it can be really hard to circle back. But I loved the beauty and the vulnerability of her saying there's ebbs and flows.
Right.
And, you know, life throws a lot of things at us and it doesn't always allow us to make sex a priority, but it's a good resource. Like to keep it there.
Daily. All right. We have a caller. Paul?
Hello.
Hi, you're on with me and Dr. Chris. How are you?
What's up, Paul?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We're doing well. How can we help you?
First off, I want to say that I love you both.
Aw, we love you too.
I work in porn, and I am curious your thoughts on the possibilities of maybe someone getting into porn, and also your thoughts on the stigma and shame attached to that I have to go through constantly and that my fiance and my family and my friends have to go through as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I talk about that a lot at Slutwalk, Dr. Chris and I. I feel like a lot of people use porn at their convenience and then they shame porn stars after. And I think it's like really, really fucked up. I don't really know the ins and outs of the porn industry per se. Dr. Chris, do you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, we live in a hypersexual culture, but it's still sex phobic. And I love the way you just said that, Amber. Like porn is good enough for us when we want to maybe get off or masturbate.
Yeah.
But like after we're done, it's disgusting. It's bad. We don't want to acknowledge that we used gross. It. Don't want to date anyone. Yeah. but I think that it's such an important thing, its existence. It's like it helps bring sex to so many people that don't have access to sex. It helps so many people feel more confident in their diverse sexual interests. It helps people realize that there's things arousing to them that they hadn't before.
Well, that's definitely, like, I watch porn and I'm just like, I didn't know that I was going to be into this.
Like, what was the one you talked about? Thumping?
Tribbing. Yeah, with, like, two girls, like, pump each other. It's fucking hot.
Tribbing, yes.
Yeah, tribbing's fucking hot. But also, like, yeah, just like a lot of stuff, like we were saying earlier, like different kind of bodies that right. I didn't think that I was going to be into. Like watching porn is like, wow, this is fucking sexy.
Yes. Yeah. And I guess as far as dating someone that's a sex worker, I always thought there's so much fur on mm-hmm. me. I always thought that there was something. It requires a lot of confidence, and the sex worker friends that I have in my life are some of the most evolved, authentic people, because in order for them to work in that industry, they had to do a lot of work on themselves and they battled a lot of stigma and they came out of it just so confident, and they really were able to teach me a lot about life. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're working in one of the industries like you have, Amber, that's probably one of the most pathologized jobs you can have, you know, having been a stripper. Mm-hmm. And so I love their radical ethics and politics. And so I recommend it.
So Paul, are you going through something like with your family or your family not accepting?
Actually surprised at how well they took it. But I'm just always curious, because, you know, like I forget that I eat, sleep and breathe sex basically and porn, so I forget people's
are uncomfortable sometimes.
Yeah, they're uncomfortable, and here I am just, you know, talking about dicks at the table next to you.
But you live in a bubble. Like most of the world has never ever met a porn performer.
Yeah,
right. So for some people it's so easy for them to stigmatize or to other, like, that's other people, that's
honestly,
someone else's son.
I feel like I only met like four.
There you go.
And I like, yeah, I only met like four people in porn in my like entire life.
Yeah.
I mean, and I always want to pick their brain. Like, what do you do? Like, is it weird that I like, can I go and search you right now? Like, while we're just sitting here?
Yeah. And well, it's also, there's this idea that, and this is probably, this is the same thing for, I think, strippers or anyone sex positive. There's this idea that porn performers and sex workers, they're all sluts and they can't be trusted and they don't have boundaries and they don't know how to be monogamous and they make shitty partners. And like, that's not true.
Yeah.
Paul, are you a shitty partner?
I don't think so.
How so?
I give lots of tickle love and scratches and foot rubs.
Oh, you sound sweet. Aww, Amber's fallen in love.
Oh, what's your number? And what's his number?
Hit Amber up after the show.
Well, yeah, I mean, shit, I was a stripper for a long time, and I'm a really, really great fucking girlfriend.
You are.
Yeah, I'm an amazing girlfriend.
And so I think porn has made me a better boyfriend.
Why?
I'm a lot more open-minded, and I live in the world of, I don't give a fuck what you think. As long as you're good, you treat other people good, we're going to be good.
Right. And would you recommend people entering the field?
I think if they get into the field, they need to know what to expect.
Right.
Just like anything, you should always, you know, before you accept a job offer, maybe go over the offer letter.
Go over the offer letter.
A good fit for you.
For sure.
Yeah. Well, that was a good question.
All right, Paul. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
All right,
bye.
Bye. I mean, that's a tough one. You know, it's not usually on the top three list of what parents want their children to do.
Right.
So I can imagine it's got to be hard to go home and tell your family that's a decision you made. But I think that there's something really powerful about entering a career, and if it's sexually based, because it's something that's meaningful to you or you want to be part of change.
So. Is it? I remember seeing something about HIV and porn and mm-hmm. how people were getting like infected. How does that happen?
That's a good question. So the porn studios, the legitimate ones, you have to get tested before you perform each scene, you know, before you're going to show up on set or whatnot. And I think a lot of the companies pay for that. It's kind of built in. They pay, you know, ahead of time. And that exact case that you're talking about, there was a lot of, and I don't like questioning people's accusations that are sexually based, but there was a lot of question about this specific performer because they had only performed, I think, once. And there's a lot of question about this person's sex life prior to, and had they been tested. Like, there's a lot of unknowns in that. Mm-hmm. Most of the people in the industry aren't quite comfortable with accepting that this person became positive on set because of the rigorous standards.
Yeah.
And it's a small community and people know each other and they take care of each other and they go to reputable testing places.
But I mean, can't you go and have sex with someone after you get tested before a shoot?
Oh, of course. That's very possible. Yeah. For sure. Yeah. And that's why there's a lot of trust in that. And that's why, you know, a lot of the industry is, like I said, really small community, and it's about trust and they know each other and it's about respect.
But usually they don't do that.
Don't do what?
Like they knowing that they got tested, like they kind of just don't have sex after.
Oh, correct. Well, it's a couple things. One, all the performers will know ahead of time who they're performing with, and you're allowed to pass on performing with someone. So it really is up to you. And so if it's a performer that you know in the past has either, you know, not gotten tested, or you don't feel comfortable, or you're not attracted to them, or you think that they're shady, or maybe they're going to be on drugs, or you think that they don't honor that they've gotten tested and they shouldn't have sex afterwards, then you would pass. But yeah, there is somewhat of a, what do you call it, honor code in there.
Got it.
Yeah.
So you're just basically taking a risk, just like everything yes. else you do in life.
Amen. I mean, anytime you have sex with someone, you're trusting that they were tested, that they haven't done anything since they've been tested, that they were actually tested for everything. And yeah, sex is a risk.
Yeah.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome back to Loveline with Amber Rose and certified sex therapist Chris Donahue.
Okay, Krista. Hi, Krista. You're on with me and Dr. Chris.
Hi, everyone. Dr. Chris. Hey. I just wanted to tell you that I absolutely love you both so much, and I think you're both amazing.
Aw, thank you. How can we help you, babe?
Oh, I have kind of a heavy question. It's about addiction. I have been dating my boyfriend for the past 3 years. I found out he is addicted to opiates. He's been on heroin for I don't know how long, but our relationship got really bad in the past couple of months. He's been lying, cheating, stealing, I mean, pretty much everything that an addict does. So it got to a point where his family and myself kind of forced him into treatment, which is where he's at right now. He's been there since August, and he'll be getting out right before Thanksgiving. So I'm proud of him for going into treatment. I think it's a great step that he's taking. But we are in this very strange place where we're not together because I had kicked him out of my house, but we still talk. I see him every week, and there's times where he's doing well and he's positive and hopeful, and then other times he's telling me that he's leaving treatment and he's just going to go and do his own thing. So basically my question is, after he's out of treatment, I just don't know what to do as far as us. He's broken all trust with me, and I don't know how to get that back, or if it's even worth getting back, or if I should just move on.
Can I step in?
Sure.
Okay. I come from a family of addiction. My uncles, my aunts, my on both sides, everybody has pretty much been on drugs or overdose in my family. One thing that you do have to realize is that it is an addiction. And when they're stealing from you and lying and cheating and doing stuff like that, it's not really them. You know, right. That it's not the person that you fell in love with. That's mm-hmm. The drugs turn them into a different person. Now,
right.
Another thing is that once you're an addict for the rest of your life, even if you're not using. Mm-hmm. So, right. You know, that's something that will always live with him, even when he is clean, that there's a possibility mm-hmm. that he will relapse and go back.
And that's very scary, thinking about marriage and if we ever had kids, just that thought that he could ever slip back into that mm-hmm. is scary.
Well, it should be. I mean, unfortunately, mm-hmm. the success rate of long-term sobriety after one's first attempt at getting clean is very low. Mm-hmm. The stages of change when we work with addiction, relapse is expected and built into it, unfortunately.
Okay.
Most will mm-hmm. relapse. You know, it's that interesting dichotomy of, on one hand, I think when those we love are struggling, we have to mm-hmm. allow them to struggle and we have to be there for them. And at the same time, you also have to look out for yourself and take care of yourself and realize what this person's actually available for.
Right.
Yeah, and I also...
And I guess... Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry, Amber. No, you go ahead.
No, I just, you know, I feel like a lot of the times people are like, you know, you need to stick it out and you need to do what's right and you need to be a woman mm-hmm. and hold him down through his hard times. And I still think that you are capable of doing that as mm-hmm. a friend, as someone that right. genuinely loves him and cares about him. You can go up to visit him. You can, you know, try to do your best to, you know, help him stay clean. But you can't devote your entire life to a person that doesn't want to fully help themselves. And like I said, you know, it's going to be forever. My uncle was on heroin at 14 years old. He's in his 60s. And it's still, you know, he's on like methadone
Yeah. And that's probably for life now.
For life. Yeah, for life.
His life. Yeah.
For life. Yeah. And so, you know, he never had children, never could keep a job. It was just, you know, that's kind of what you're, not that he can't clean his life up, but the success rate.
Well, and that, and also, you know, it's about if he's, oh man, it's hard. You've been together, you said, for 3 years.
Yeah, for 3 years.
Because my blanket advice is always when someone has dealt with a drug issue and they get out of treatment, their first couple set of goals should be around stabilizing themselves, finding support, you know, low stress things, not I need to work on my relationship, which has been falling apart because of my addiction, right?
Right.
And so Amber's right in that maybe the first step should be for you to be as supportive as you can as a friend, mm-hmm. give him time and space to work on maintaining his sobriety. Because I'll tell you, it's easiest to be sober when you're in treatment because you're staying there overnight. There's people working with you. They're giving you drug tests. There's not as many triggers. When you leave treatment is when it really is the struggle and it really counts. And that's when you really get to see what this person can do and how hard they're willing to work at it. And so it remains to be seen. We need to wait until he gets out to really see, is he willing to go to therapy, go to meetings if 12 steps make sense to him, stay away from his drug using friends, stay away from high risk situations.
Yeah.
Like, we don't know yet.
And that's the thing, right. You know, and once drug addicts.
What is your opinion mm-hmm. on him living with me again? Because I don't think it's a great idea until he's kind of gained my trust back and proven to me that he actually has changed.
Babe, it's not, listen, it doesn't work like that. He stole from you and he cheated and he lied and he took your money or jewelry or whatever.
Yeah.
Because he's on drugs. Mm-hmm. He's on drugs, babe. And so when he gets out of rehab, Dr. Crochet, 9 out of 10, he will have a relapse.
Right.
You know, so you got to know that most likely it would happen again. Most likely. You can always hope for the best. But the mm-hmm. first time in treatment, I fucking love cigarettes. I love cigarettes. I work a lot and that's like, you know, I don't smoke weed. I never did a pill in my life. I never tried any other drug. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the night, I'll put my baby down to sleep. I'll go outside and I'll smoke a cigarette. You know how many times I've tried to quit? I quit. I really did quit. Yeah. And then mm-hmm. I'm like, fuck. I had a long, stressful ass day. I just need a cigarette. Like, I don't care. Everyone leave me alone. I just want to smoke. And that's a cigarette, babe. You know what I mean? Heroin is a lifelong addiction.
And I haven't ever even smoked anything. So when he told me this, it was just a complete shock. And I feel so naive and I feel so foolish for allowing the things that I did. And now that I'm out of it, I'm so scared that he will go back to doing it that I don't even want to continue any kind of relationship.
But don't feel foolish for that because you loved him. You know, you don't want to just throw him away because he has an addiction, right? But you also have one life to live and you have to live it for yourself. You can't live it for other people.
And you just answered it. You're not ready to re-enter the relationship immediately and to live with him. It sounds like you have a lot of work, unfortunately, that now you need to do with yourself because of what you went through with him. And so it's very, very, very fair. And he should expect this for you to say, I need time. You need time. We can stay connected as friends, but you need to work mm-hmm. on yourself and I need to work on myself before either one of us is ready to be in a relationship again.
And do you think that it's best for me to go to a therapy that's just focused on me or more like a group therapy to be around other people that are dealing with the same thing?
Both. But
okay.
Unfortunately, it's one of those situations where you didn't, quote unquote, do anything or choose anything. But because you were in this relationship with an addict, you've been impacted. And now you have some guilt. You feel like you
owe him.
Mm-hmm. And you have some work to mm-hmm. do to figure out, get this all in perspective and stabilize yourself. Give him time to work on himself. And I think group therapy would be good for you. I think individual therapy would also be good for you. Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you both so much.
Let us know how that goes.
All right, honey.
Bye.
Okay.
Yeah, man. It's tough because when you really love someone, you can't just be like, you can't just throw them away and be right. like, I don't give a fuck. You're an addict. You stole from me. Go fuck yourself. Like, it just doesn't work like that.
Not but, when you love someone. Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, do I have to take care of you for the rest of my life? Do you have to constantly hurt me and steal from me? Do I have to hide my money and my jewelry when you're around? My mom had to. From my family members, I remember my uncle stole my gold necklace that my dad bought me, you know, and sold it. Got it back, but sold it.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's like.
I mean, personally for me, I'm not single, but if I was and I met someone, they would, and they were someone who struggles with addiction, they would need to have a few years of sobriety before I'd be interested in dating them. I'd need to see a few years of their ability and willingness to stay clean, stay away from old people, old situations, deal with triggers. Because yeah, relapse is the big part of most people's story with drug use.
For sure. Okay, so sidebar, the holidays are coming up. And, you know, my boyfriend is really fucking bougie. And he always wants something like super extravagant. I'm like, dude, you're going to spend all my money. But he spends a lot of money on me too, so I can't be mad.
Yeah, you guys have those matching watches. Oh, those are pretty bougie.
Yeah, they're fucking bougie.
Those are beautiful. I remember when you first got there, you're like, look at the watch we got. Yeah. I was like, I'm blinded.
Yeah.
Diamonds. Do you have any ideas for the holidays for him then? You have time. I mean, there's time. You know what my favorite gifts are? Travel. Because it's an experience.
Yeah, but it's not. We travel so much that traveling, like, we can't really just take a bunch of days off. We have kids. We have,
you know. Then you know what? This is what you do. You do the opposite. You do something beautifully simplistic. Some of the most adorable dates or gifts were when someone said, we're packing a picnic, we're going to go to the beach, we're going to go to the park, and the two of us were going to sit there and have a cute night.
Imagine me and 21 Savage at a park trying to eat.
Collective laugh. Yeah, that like, would be a little disruptive.
Like, I have to fucking go. I have to go find funny. Somewhere where no one knows.
You'd all be in like massive disguises.
Yeah, I would have on like a synthetic blonde.
I love her calling me out like that. Imagine just rolling up into the park like no one's gonna know.
Yeah, right.
Well said. All right, well, guess what? You're on your own.
I'm fucked.
I hate all my ideas.
Basically.
I'm simple. Like, I like the travel thing. I like doing things together. I'm cute. I like, yeah, I'm easy.
I know. I feel like I'm easy.
Yeah.
Like, I don't really expect a lot. Not expect a lot, but I really don't want a lot. I just want time. That's like my love language.
Yep. That's you know? How I always think. Time together.
Yeah, I want time, but like with him, it's like, do I just buy him a car?
No.
Or a house or something.
Babe, you know what? Here's another car. I love you.
And here's a Porsche.
You know, yeah. It's your favorite color. You know, it's green. You know, whatevs.
Let's take all my money.
Yeah. No, think of something experiential. Something that you can do together. I think that kind of stuff.
Well, we'll have next week. We'll have callers, or like towards Christmas, we'll have callers call in and.
We'll have them give us their favorite holiday tips.
Yeah.
Cool.
Help us out a little bit.
Sounds good.
All right. So for your chance to be a part of our show, call 213-375-5258. Leave a voicemail for our wonderful producer, Anne, and she will call you back when we're recording. That is 213-375-5258. And subscribe to our podcast at lovelinewithamberrose.com. Until next week, everyone.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.